Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Don't run all that hot water. I'm on a bath later on.
I feel like I sound like The Walking Dead this week.
You don't look it.
Thanks.
Oh, sorry, you're listening to a film show, by the way.
Hello, I'm Denise.
I'm Martin.
Hello.
And we're having a bit of a horror extravaganza, as we thought. Next Saturday is November. That's post Halloween.
Yep.
So we thought
Celluloid Screams is still going on.
So we thought this would be the best weekend to have a musical selection,
which everywhere, would reflect everywhere horror. You look, there's horror films,
horror.
Isn't there?
Horror.
Everywhere.
We've got some, and there's some stories which strangely fold into it being a celebration of horror. But first off, I noticed that there's a documentary that is premiering at the Rome Film Festival. Living Without a Script, which is a film about Roberto Rossellini, specifically about his last the last 20 years or so of his career. And there was a great interview with Isabella Rossellini in The Guardian this week, talking about the film and her life of being brought up for her early years amidst probably the biggest scandal that had ever hit the film
Ingrid
world.
Bergman.
Ingrid Bergman, Robert Rossellini, both of them married to other people.
What year was this? It was the late 1948
or something.
Was it that early?
Yeah, they were making a film called Stromboli.
Right.
It all happened, and Bergman then got pregnant with Isabella. This sort of thing didn't happen in the 1940s.
No, she her career really suffered from it, didn't it?
She was pretty much a Hollywood pariah, wasn't she? And she'd been one of the biggest stars in Hollywood at the time. But it also made me think of something which is like involved. If you're interested in Isabella Rossellini and her life with her father, she wrote a book a few years ago called My Father Would Be 100 this year, I think it was called, which she did with the Canadian director Guy Maddin. I don't know if you're aware of his work. Saddest Music in All the World.
No.
You need to get your pen out.
Right. All right, Guy Maddin, putting it in the book.
Guy Maddin.
Guy Maddin.
And Rossellini has collaborated with him a number of times over the past 20 or so years. And this book is absolutely marvellous. And at the back of the book, there's a little DVD with a short film that Maddin and Rossellini made about her father. It's a beautiful book. Someone's drilling.
I thought it was the monster waking up next door.
It's the White House. They're just finishing off knocking the last bit. And this book, I picked this book up, I think, for £3 in The Works many years ago.
Oh, right.
You try and get it now, and it's probably very, very difficult to get hold of. But this was in the days when you could pick up something decent in The Works. But I'm really looking forward to seeing this documentary, because I just love that story about what happened to her parents and about her early life. So, yes, one to look out for.
I love that song. Billy Bragg did a cover version of it when he was doing that Woody Guthrie project. Mm. And it's just singing about the joy. So Woody Guthrie wrote a song about the joy of Ingrid Bergman and how beautiful she was. Ingrid Bergman.
Next piece of news. Oh, my God.
You're really down on this, aren't you?
I think this is puerile beyond belief.
The lovely Bridget Jones, specifically Renée Zellweger as Bridget Jones.
The chipmunk, as I like to call her.
Is having a statue unveiled in London.
Erected, is that?
Bronze in Leicester Square, which is like the centre of film premieres in London, isn't it? But
apparently.
But I would have thought they'd have put something near Borough Market. I suppose they can't get away with it there. But that's where her flat is, isn't it?
Why are you putting up anything at all, I think, is more the question.
Well, let's have a look, shall we? What's the excuse?
Because she's a popular great London woman. I keep repeating over and over again.
So Fellner, the co-chair of Working Title,
said well, he would say that, wouldn't
he? Overexcited about the development because we've never had anything like that before. I think it's great because Bridget's a proper London heroine, and the idea of having Bridget ever present in a brilliant London location in the centre of London is really exciting. London.
It's a celebration of mediocrity. I'm not going to let you have this one.
I don't care.
I do.
Well, there's. Are you bothered about the Harrison Ford statue that's there already?
She's an American actress doing I wasn't even aware there was a Harrison Ford statue.
Well,
there.
You see,
as what?
Whip Crackaway.
I must admit, it doesn't offend me quite as much, purely because it's not British as such. I think if you're looking for something that's supposed to be an icon of British cinema...
Well, I think it's more these are big cinema things. So there already are things like Paddington Bear, Mary Poppins, Harry Potter, Batman...
I have to live with
there's
Harry
all
Potter
these bronze
all the
statues there already. I think you're getting your knickers in a twist over nothing.
No, I'm not. There comes a time where you just say to yourself, enough. And that's what I'm saying here on this one.
I think there's that in Leicester Square there are already these little statues, yeah, and I think it's a nice addition because Bridget Jones is an essential part of the canon of British film history in the 90s, noughties, 10s and 20s.
Oh, leave her. Shut the front door. What a load of gibberish.
I love Bridget Jones.
Well, there you are, then.
You know,
you're not coming from an objective point of view.
Neither are you, because you hate her. There's got to be somewhere in the middle.
Always, you know, it'd be like if I was defending them putting a statue of William Shatner up in Leicester Square, you'd be foaming at the mouth, and I'll say,
I wouldn't
all right, maybe you're right.
I wouldn't be, because I'd do a little bit of a look and go, well, it's because there's loads of stuff like that there already.
What? Aliens?
No, there's loads of film statues in Leicester Square. It's just a tourism business. Don't get your knickers in a twist, babe. It'll be fine.
Leicester Square, in fact, I hardly ever go there now. Because
you've missed all these statues. They're exactly. Having a party there and you don't even know it.
I'm definitely never going there again now. Otherwise, I would end up being led away with a statue I had taken off at the knees strapped to me.
Bridget Jones films are available on streaming everywhere.
I'll tell you why I hate it as well, because it's exactly the same thing as that awful, horrible statue at St Pancras.
Oh, what? Which one?
The one of them two... a man and a woman.
Oh dear, we found our polar opposites, because I love that statue.
That's Richard Curtis
and
world for you, isn't
what's
it?
What's the other one? There's a poet there as well. Is it Benjamin?
Fair enough, yeah. Benjamin.
Sort of like trying to catch a train.
That's fair. I'm all there for the Benjamin stuff, but that other statue is Love Actually. In bronze.
See, I don't think these statues are meant to be particularly high art anyway. They are just like, in the middle of Leicester Square, here's some film icons.
Well, maybe they should
in
be.
In bronze.
And that's why we're settling for the mediocre.
Okay.
There you go.
Another mediocre statue has been unveiled and it's upset Martin.
And they better not unveil any more of them. Do you want to talk about the London Film Festival highlights?
I have
nothing to say on this one, so I'll keep
quiet. The London Film Festival concluded last weekend. We've been mentioning it on the show a bit because the showroom had some previews for some films there as well, and we mentioned those last week, of which Hamnet was my absolute standout favourite, which I think is why some of the other films I saw I was a bit mediocre about, because I was like, yeah, but Hamnet's
you're using that word as well this week.
Yeah, mediocre.
See, it's
I hear you say something and I parrot
I've started it, yeah. Like a word virus.
There was a documentary that won, which was the documentary that won the overall prize. Because we were saying, weren't we, about the London Film Festival, it's not, because it's late in the calendar, it doesn't really get many like big premieres like Cannes and your Venice, and it sort of puts the best of them together kind of thing almost.
It's a bit of an afterthought in a way, isn't it? It's like, if you missed anything over the past 5 months, you might be able to catch up with some of it here. They haven't already been out.
It's good stuff. They did a really good programme and it was quite extensive as well, wasn't it? I think they've got a lot more venues.
Oh, good,
you were saying, from when you used to go.
I mean, I was looking back. I dug out loads of old, in the days when it was the NFT, National Film Theatre, you know, their monthly. And for each year I've got one which is about the London Film Festival. And it's strange to see the films that were premiered there and ones which went on to do great and ones which have just disappeared. And the actual programme was quite narrow, relatively small, and didn't take place over a large number of venues either.
Well, the winner of the... They do still have their prizes, and the landmark... is it Lucretia Martel won the official competition Best Film Award. It's a documentary... and it's about the
indigenous.
It's easy for you to say. Activist Javier Chocobar.
Right.
Which I love that name. Can we just pause and just say what?
Chocobar. Yes.
The other good thing about the London Film Festival, though, just sorry, going back to that, is quite a lot of the time the films are out not that far away. Yeah. Which I quite like.
Sometimes it's barely worth a title festival, is it? Coming soon.
So this is an Argentinian activist, Javier Chocobar. so that was the documentary that won. I'm sorry, I'm not very well.
Do you want to end it there? You look as though you're flagging and you're drowning, not waving.
That was like brilliant, brilliant radio.
You're like a plague dog. Sorry. Should we move on?
Oh, dear. Well, do we want to look at any other winners?
If you've got any other winners there you'd like to tell us about.
No, let's have a song.
Have you ever heard any such abject indifference to being on a radio show?
I nearly didn't make it today, I'll be honest.
Yes, if only you hadn't. There you are. Okay.
Well, I've had a row about Bridget Jones. I'm just not doing bad.
Oh, there's lots more to come. I only found out about this the other day, but the British actress Samantha Eggar passed away the other week, which is quite strange, this, because Terence Stamp died only a few weeks back, and both her and he
were
in The Collector together. Mm. And in many ways, that film really brought both of them to the public's attention. And she was the woman who Stamp's character kidnaps in the film. And both of them, their careers took off from this. Both of them won an acting award, a joint acting award at Cannes. I think both were nominated for acting Academy Awards as well. And she went off into the 60s, appearing in lots of big budget movies, never really making quite as much of an impact as what she had in The Collector. And then in the 70s, she moves to Hollywood. She starts doing loads of TV work.
Yeah, things like your Heart to Hearts, your Starskies. Yeah,
she'll have been in Columbo, she'll have been in Murder, She Wrote, everything, she'll be there. But she does also take this tangent off into horror movies. Mm. And one horror movie in particular, David Cronenberg's The Brood.
Which is, I remember Shelley, our friend Shelley, doing a presentation of that at the
It is incredible. Have you seen The Brood?
Yeah, yeah. With a Shelley introduction.
I remember the first time I saw it, for some reason, it was on a double bill, and I got to the cinema 5 minutes late, and I was like 5 minutes into it. And it was that scene where the kids were in that house, and you don't know. And well, I had no idea what was going on, but I was terrified. And then it's later in the film where Samantha Eggar finally appears, and she really is terrifying. It's an amazing performance. I think she was only on set for 4 days.
Really? What was that? Sorry.
Sorry, coughing again.
Did I speak? Oh dear. Sorry.
Did you want to say something else?
No.
Did you just want
you
to cough?
Carry on. I'm just going to.
You told me to keep speaking. And apparently, her and Oliver Reed had been good friends. Oliver Reed had been good friends in childhood. And they do the scene together, don't they? In The Brood. So that's definitely one to look out for. And anyway, it's sort of Halloweenish night or Halloweenish week. If you want a great horror film to watch, check out The Brood. It's one of Cronenberg's best, I think. And some very scary kids. Right. Trailer trash. She's got a load of stuff here.
No, I was just going to say. Oliver.
She's just showing me a DVD
of
The Devils.
May appear later. Yeah.
We just bring along DVDs and Blu-rays to try and impress each other, and we sneer at each other. Is that it? Oh, it's not a special edition. It's not autographed. No. Trailer trash.
Trailer trash.
You want to kick off? Can you talk?
Trash. Yeah, I can talk.
Quickly then.
Wake up, dead man.
Wake up, dead man. Yes. Are you talking to me?
Do you like The Knives Out?
No.
No.
I quite like the first one. I got halfway through the second one. I'm not interested in this one.
You're not at all?
Not at all.
Right. Is that just because it's not? I don't want to say it. You know, I'm going to say it. It's not for you, Martin. Like, or is it because you think
I
it
think,
looks?
I
bad?
Think I'm going to. I'm going to draw a line here. You every week you are categorising me, pigeonholing me into what I do and I don't like. You have no idea.
But is it
what I like?
You like. You quite like the first one.
I did. Yeah. I did. Second one, I really didn't like at all.
Do you think they're stretching it too thin now?
I think. I don't know. I think they mistakenly think they've got a great franchise here. And I'm not sure it is. I'm not sure it is.
Yeah, it's
and
a bit
I thought
like,
the same about the White Lotus as well. It was something I thought. I'm not sure this is as good.
I
as
like
what
your power in the first instance.
As what they're
but now you're diluted.
Yeah.
And it's almost become a bit like you know those Sunday evening BBC adaptations of Agatha Christie type things or. That sort of all the big names are in it. Who's going to get killed? Who's going to kill them?
And you can you can admire the mechanics of these sorts of things, but essentially, I don't think I'm a great fan of whodunits.
Right.
And you know, I've never been that into Agatha Christie adaptations.
But you know, but there's something that appeals. So Andrew Scott's in this, Glenn Close is in this. So there is something about the there's an appeal for Kerry Washington. I'll watch that film because she's.
I can see. Let's say the casts are put together in a very clever way.
Josh O'Connor, who is very hot right now and all the time,
the hottest. He's the hottest. but yeah, fair enough. If you want to watch it, please do.
Wake up, Dead Man, Knives Out Mystery, coming soon. Well, that also premiered at the London Film Festival,
yes,
didn't it?
Yes,
it's coming to the end of November, November the 26th, and it's out on Netflix a few weeks later.
So there you are. There you are. You mentioned this last week, The Choral.
The Choral.
I think a film I would rather have my eyes slit open than sit
and
watch.
Do you know what? I gave it quite a middling to rubbish review last week. And I think, and I even called it pedestrian, which was a bit rude.
But sometimes it needs to be said.
Yeah, but I think it was one of those cosy Sunday afternoon TV dramas. It's not very cinematic, but it's still got a nice little story at the heart of it. It's got a lot going on, though.
And remember, I've just looked at the trailer. It's one of those trailers that seem to tell you everything.
Yeah.
I know it probably won't have, but...
It kind of does.
It will have also introduced you to every single character.
And there's a lot of characters. And so you've got... Ray Fiennes is coming back from Germany to this small Yorkshire town, First World War, and it's the era of the First World War when people are dying and they've died and a village is coping with all of that grief, but we haven't got to conscription just yet.
Yeah.
So they're trying to fill the choral with... Normally there would be like established people in there and it would be men of a certain age and a certain class, but now they're going to the dregs and even the women.
Yeah.
And they stage this, piece, but they mess about with it. And there's three young men, and then there's another woman here, and there's all sorts of different characters over there. And you kind of lose.
Promise
all
me, we
of
aren't
the...
going to review this when it's on. It's just the second.
I've already reviewed it. We've
exactly.
done it.
Can
yeah.
we leave it there? But it's also by Iba Gum Productions, isn't it?
It's
so Yorkshire.
Yeah, it's Nicholas Hintner and Alan Bennett, and they've worked together
nice.
A lot. Saltaire looks lovely.
And they've filmed a lot of it in Saltaire, haven't they?
Most of it,
but yeah. He looked brilliant. Mm.
It's not awful, but the trailer covers it. Yeah,
this
no,
one isn't for
no,
me.
No, it's not for you, Martin.
I'm going to try and not use this particular name much more before Christmas. But I'm going to have to introduce Mr. Oscar Buzz.
Oscar Buzz. No, I promise that's not a made-up name. Neither is Javier Chocobar.
Oscar Buzz is what goes. The films are going to tell us are going to win all the Oscars. And I saw this trailer yesterday, Nuremberg, with Rami Malek and an almost unrecognisable Russell Crowe. He has definitely eaten all the pies.
And all of Rami Malek. He looks tiny.
He's playing Hermann Göring, and it's all about Göring's trial at Nuremberg after the end of the Second World War. I'm not going to say too much else about it, but people say, oh, Russell Crowe, oh, yeah. So he couldn't get into that gladiator suit anymore, so he's in this suit as Hermann Göring, and I don't think there's any padding either. Maybe it's a bit too early to be screaming, this is going to win the Oscars, but...
It's got a very bleak palette about it, hasn't
Yes, a bleak palette.
Yes.
Right, so you'll be hearing a lot about that one over the next few weeks as well. Music, maestro,
music,
please.
What's first? We're doing a bit of a horror theme, aren't we? We started off with As If You Needed Telling, the murder scene in Psycho there, didn't we? Because I saw it at the pictures on Sunday. Have you watched Psycho lately?
I haven't watched it for a couple of years.
I watched it at the light on Sunday, and I don't think I've seen it in the cinema before. I've watched it at home when I've watched it. And then, oh my God, after the shower scene, you're a bit like, oh, come on. Go on with it.
Well, it's a film that has to start again from the beginning.
Yeah, but then there's this big bit where the police sheriff guy, when they go to him for help, says his mum's dead, and then they still go back to the house and talk about his mum, and I'm like, you know she's dead. I don't get it. Like, I've got really confused watching Psycho. I digress.
I mean, the big shock in Psycho is when Janet Leigh is murdered.
Mm. Spoilers.
In 1960.
Spoilers.
Well, if you don't know that, you need to listen to another show. And if you went to see that in 1960, you must have been completely and utterly baffled. Well, what happens now?
Yeah.
People probably would have got up and left.
Yeah, well, because we were saying, weren't we, the other week, that back then Hitchcock did a whole campaign about you must come for the beginning of this film and stay till the end, and then we'll let everyone out and in again. And everyone was like, well, we don't do it like that. We just come in whenever we like. Yeah, but can you imagine?
So what's the music you're going to play? The clock's ticking against us here.
It's well, this is the kind of time of year when I like to look at horror film music that I never see the films for. I go scouting around listening to interesting music. So we're going to listen to Fabio Frizzi from Fear in the Town of the Living Dead.
And you've never seen this film?
No, I never will.
Thanks.
A wee snippet from Fabio Frizzo, the Italian musical composer who did a lot of, I don't know, with a name like that, did a lot of cheesy horror films, and I don't watch them, but I do love the soundtracks. They're just a lot.
You haven't watched that one, have you?
No, never will. Never will.
Never will. Absolute charlatan. Comes on here. Okay, so we decided to fill time. Who's one of our big guests on here most weeks?
Phil,
we need you. And we were just going to talk about particular horror films that we might like. Denise doesn't like any, but
it's not that I don't like them.
Could I get on with my bit of this?
It's not
stop! You're going to have your moment. You have your moment.
Right, carry on. God, blow me.
Bridget Bloody Jones is a horror film as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, I was going to pick on a particular subgenre which may not be that well known in this country, and it's films about La Llorona, the Weeping Woman. These films are ubiquitous in Mexico and Central America, and they've been made for decades. Especially in Mexico. The first Mexican sound horror film was made in 1933, and that was a version of La Llorona, directed by Ramon Pion. And this is a story of a ghostly female spirit that makes her presence felt by the sound of terrible crying, mm-hmm. as she's looking for her lost children. And there's different elements to how this has happened, whether or not she herself has drowned them or whether they have been stolen from her and murdered by others. But when her figure arrives, mayhem normally follows quite shortly afterwards. You can pick up the 1933 version on an amazing Blu-ray by Indicator, which has the restored film, and apparently they only had a 16mm print in absolutely terrible condition. And there's loads of stuff about the legend of La Llorona. And if you think back to Mulholland Drive and that song, La Llorona, The Weeping Woman, which is crying by Roy Orbison. See, it's all fitting together, this. I've had all this planned for months. But this is an absolutely brilliant Blu-ray. If you're interested in finding out about the origins of this story, and some of it goes back to Aztec times, which was then superseded by Spanish folk tales, and how it is now is a very powerful piece of Central American culture. And there have been countless versions subsequently made about La Llorona in Mexico and all different Central American countries. As you can imagine, Hollywood has even got in on the act with a couple of films in recent years. But the other version of this that I would point you towards is, again, called La Llorona. And it's a film from Guatemala. I can hear you all sighing at home. Oh, there he goes. It would have to be from Guatemala, wouldn't it? Can't just do a film that I can go down the cinema and see. Guata bleeding Mala. Well, this is available on the Shudder horror platform. And if you have a multi-region DVD player, it's also available on a Criterion disc, and I watched this again last night. And they've sort of transformed it a bit, as it's set in Guatemala after the overthrow of a military dictatorship, and it's set in the home of one of the army generals who carried out the mass slaughters and disappearances. And it's about this general having a trial, being accused but later acquitted of genocide, and him being trapped inside this mansion surrounded by the general population who are doing this constant singing and banging of drums, and lots of the servants leave, and this young girl called Alma comes to work as a maid. She's from the indigenous Guatemalan population, and as soon as she arrives, all sorts of strange things start happening with water, and things get weirder and weirder and weirder in incredibly subtle ways. There are no sort of jump shocks or anything in this, But from as soon as she arrives, there's this sense of dread which envelops the film and which continues right up until its end. It's such a beautiful film to look at. The sound design is amazing. And as I say, although there are no shocks as such, there are moments that just absolutely freeze your blood. Mm. I cannot recommend this film highly enough. It's very, very accessible. But maybe the second time you watch it, you see how all these hints about water are there throughout the film. So that's going to be my recommendation if you want something a bit off the wall. La Llorona. And as I say, you can pick it up to watch on Shudder if you can't get your hands on the American DVD. Thank you.
Well, my sort of relationship with horror is, we sort of said, oh, she doesn't like horror. It's not that I don't like it, it's just that I love the I like the films that came later that sort of reference other horror, but I don't even know the other horror that they're referencing. So I like the funny stuff. I like your old Shaun of the Deads and whatever. But I really got into Peter Strickland's films and the film In Fabric, which is it's a kind of about a cursed red dress, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's got that mix of, there's obviously loads of references to films that I know nothing about in there. But there's also like this sort of quite black humour. It's about this cursed red dress, and whoever wears it has amazing. It's just weird and wonderful. It's kind of set in this 80s setting, so the production design of it immediately makes me feel like my childhood. And there's this huge bit in a department store where the dress sort of comes back to. Which is really eerie and evocative of the time. And I think because in my mind it's my childhood, it's even scarier.
Mm.
Yeah.
I interviewed him.
You did,
about
yeah.
this film. Because I was asking him about where they found that department store.
I think it was in Peterborough or something.
It was an actual department store. And we were talking about the design of department stores and how much they can evoke your childhood.
Mm.
And he was fascinating. He was a very sort of droll, sort of setback sort of guy. You
he
know?
Was born in Reading, wasn't he?
He was like somewhere like that, Peterborough, you know, like the a London satellite town it was in. It may well have been Reading, come to think of it. Maybe it's not there anymore, but it's beautiful, the way they set dressed it, isn't it?
Well, and it's Marianne Jean Baptiste as well, who is just so, like, true in everything she's in.
Mm.
She's so sort of vulnerable and strong at the same time. I just think she's an amazing actress. That's one of my absolute favourites. But I remember seeing this film, Under the Skin, Jonathan Glazer's sort of, it's sort of sci-fi meets horror, isn't it, really?
I'm going to let one go.
Yeah. But, you know, Scarlett Johansson's this extraterrestrial roaming Scotland and, in a white van, luring victims into this black pool of
something.
But the dread in the soundtrack, this is when I first heard Mika Levi's music.
Yeah.
And the dread and the tension of that music is something amazing. But, in fact, I went to the cinema with my friend that I saw this with last night because I was saying, I don't really know which film I'm going to talk about. And she was, well, obviously you're going to talk about Under the Skin, a poster in your living room, and you love that film. I remember when we went to see that film, and you know the baby on the beach scene?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
I don't even need to say it, do I? The baby on the beach scene.
On the beach.
It rocked her so much and unsettled her so much, and she still can't really, she can remember that feeling. And that moment, I remember sitting in the bar with her afterwards and just being like, I think I might need to hold Jess's hand here.
First time I saw it, the rest of the film just skimmed by me. I couldn't get that out of my head.
No.
And it's nothing gory, it's nothing violent.
It's
a baby on the beach.
Yeah, it's a baby on the beach.
But it's a stunning film. And you'll never think of Deacon Blue in the same way again. Will you?
I mean, no.
No.
So, yeah, So my relationship with horror is I've seen lots of the old greats and the but the things that really get me are the more recent interpretations.
And that's what makes this show so great. We don't go for the obvious on here, do we? Guatemalan horror. Someone who knows nothing about horror films giving you their recommendations. You can't pay money for that. You really can't.
And we'll leave the devils for another day.
For another day, yeah. I'm sure that day will come. Right, another piece of music. This has got some dialogue with it as well. I'm going to go straight into it. It's his Gene Wilder and Peter Boyle from Young Frankenstein.
Distinguished colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, tonight it is my great privilege of introducing to you a man whose family name was once both famous and infamous. And now, may I present to you Dr. Baron Friedrich von Frankenstein.
Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, damen und herren, from what was once an inarticulate mass of lifeless tissues, may I now present a cultured, sophisticated man about town. Hit it!
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes or cutaway coat, perfect fits. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper, trying mighty hard to look like Gary Cooper.
Ooper, ooper!
Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their mitts.
Snippets there from Young Frankenstein.
Putting on the Ritz.
Putting on the Ritz. Hope you're all deciding what you're going to play on Halloween night.
Yeah.
I had that on my list, but I don't know. Halloween 3 is one of my favourites. My favourite Halloween film as well. That might be when it's actually Halloween.
Yeah.
Reviews then. The film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. I'm going to do some reviews for you now. And do I kick off with this?
Well, Go on.
I went to see The Mastermind.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to see that on Sunday.
I have to read the ending if you want.
Mm.
Well, you tell me because I had no idea what happened. Okay, The Mastermind, and I think I said to you when you finally turned up this morning, was...
dragged myself out of the sick bed.
It's just like the most like baffling, confusing, annoying, frustrating film I've seen this year. It's about Josh O'Connor is a man with a young family living in a small town in Massachusetts, which has an art gallery, which is not very secure. And he hatches this plan to steal these four pieces of modern art from it, which just involves him practically walking in, taking them off the wall and walking out with them. That's the heist. And then this is all over in half an hour. The heist has been done. And then the film's still got another hour and a bit to go. And it sort of meanders round the after effects of the robbery in a very casual, you know, I'll just walk around everywhere and see what happens sort of thing. And then, is anything going to happen here? There is one scene where he packs up the four pieces of art into four canvas bags and he puts them in a box. And then the next bit of the scene, he's at a pig farm where he's going to hide them. Where he takes each frame out of the box, carries them up a ladder and puts them on top of this sort of shelf thing. And each one he does, and you see him do all of this, and then he takes the box up the ladder with some difficulty, and at the top of this, he then puts everyone back in, closes it, and that's it. And I'm sitting there thinking, what am I seeing this for? This is ridiculous. But it's brilliant. I was completely captivated.
I knew you were going to say that at some point.
But you didn't know when.
Yeah, I didn't know when.
And then like, the last act is him just like mooching around with no money, trying to scrape together some money to get on a bus to somewhere else, like stealing clothes, being in flophouse hotels. And for most of the film, there's no dialogue. It
sounds very Kelly Reichardt.
I was, and I also thought it was very Robert Bresson as
right.
well. Very, very austere. You know, incredibly austere. A few things about it. Josh O'Connor is great, and it's a bit like that La Chimera from last year.
He's
messing about stealing art.
Yeah.
And I'll say no more about the theft bit, because I'll leave that to you if you're going to go. Alana Haim. Oh, I love Alana Haim. You know, she was only in one battle after another for a few minutes, and she just got a red blue off, didn't she? But I think she's wonderful. But fair enough, she hasn't got enough to do in this. It's a bit unfair. Her character needed more time because you don't quite get what is it between them,
right?
And then as Josh O'Connor's parents, the wonderful Hope Davis as his mum, who you know, she's not that old and she's playing middle-aged mothers now. But then the Peste Resistance is world's greatest living actor. Bill Camp is
Bill
in it. Bill Camp. And I am making a camp. Anything with Bill Camp in is worth watching.
Right.
He can be, he's in everything. And it doesn't matter if he's in just one scene. He makes it all so much better. Now, I'm going to give this. I'm going to give Mastermind 3 rates. I loved it so much.
Oh my gosh. Sounds like your film of the year.
It's something about it that has just got to me.
Oh.
But don't go and see it because you'll probably hate it.
Oh no, I'm looking forward to
it.
I'm
not to you, to the general public. You know, there'll be then people outside again throwing things at me when we leave the studio. But I just thought this was marvellous. And you know, and watch more Kelly Reichardt films because she's built up such a great body of work. It's to remember. But this is, it's like nothing else.
Well, talking of bodies of work and unlikely young mothers, Yorgos Lanthimos' new film, Begonia, went to see that last night. They were doing a preview 35mm screening at the showroom, but it's out on general release this Friday. I'm not going to hold you in suspense. I love this film.
No.
Well, you know, Kinds of Kindness may be his last film. He's churning out a lot, right?
Yeah. Maybe
and
too much.
With Emma Stone as well. But this is brilliant. So Jesse Plemons plays a young man called Teddy, who has a cousin called Don, played by Aidan Delbis. And they are middle America, confused young men, well, middle-aged men, let's say, but they've fallen down a conspiracy whole theory, and it leads to them kidnapping, led mostly by Jesse Plemons. And he's not bad Jesse, he's not good Jesse, he's sad Jesse that does bad things in this film.
Jesse.
He kidnaps Emma Stone's Michelle, CEO, executive, but a lot, because it's Yorgos Lanthimos, a lot more comes out the connections that are there that are interesting. He believes her to be the representative from an alien race who he wants to save the world, basically. It has got scares, laughs, ridiculous situations. It's Kubrickian. We decided it was a bit Kubrickian. In these long shots and things running into shot and fights happening and then running off and absurdist humour. It just looks wonderful. Mm. And it takes you on a journey where you're not surprised where you go because of who it is that's making the film. But you enjoy getting there, I think. And it looks great, it sounds great.
I suppose I'm going to have
but
to go.
Alicia Silverspoon, Silverstone. I can't speak today. Alicia Silverstone appears as Jesse Plemons' mum, but it's kind of like a flashback.
And again,
bit.
You know, there's, she's mum. okay, I took on the task of watching Apple's Mr. Scorsese epic 5-hour, 5-part. Documentary on the work of Martin Scorsese. The film's got a portrait of Martin Scorsese. Mm-hmm. It's directed by Rebecca Miller, who is Daniel Day-Lewis's wife. So she had
he's been busy. She
had an in there, to get in it. Right. There was a time when a Martin Scorsese film came out and I would go and see it the first week, the first day it was out. Mm-hmm. That time is long gone. And in a weird sort of way, this documentary really reflects that his career. Mm. These are hour-long episodes, and the first 4 episodes go up to 1990. Sorry, 1999, I beg your pardon. The final episode does the last 25 years of his career. Mm. And for me, yeah, that's the period I'm least interested in anyway. And it does seem that's the period there's least to talk about. The other things, there'll be films there that you know too well. Obvious, immediate access with Scorsese, De Niro, Isabella Rossellini. Almost everyone who's anyone comes in and talks about it. It's fascinating. And it can be a bit warts and all. You know, he talks quite honestly about his cocaine hedonism days. It's fascinating. And there was a couple of films that I thought, I think I might go back and watch them. Mm. For me, it's King of Comedy and After Hours.
After Hours,
are the two of his films that I would keep if I had to keep any. Mm. And I'm not dismissing all of the others, but there's also some bits where, you think, what on earth were you making that for? You forget that he did The Colour of Money.
Relatively recently, yeah.
Bringing Out the Dead, who remembers that, And the whole DiCaprio, Scorsese years, you can see it's both of them needing each other. Mm. DiCaprio to get what he thinks is going to be a respectable career, Scorsese to get the money to make, I'm afraid to say, ever more bloated movies. It's fascinating, and I suppose it depends on what you feel about all of Scorsese's work. I'm great with some of it. This latest stuff leaves me cold, but it's a good 5-hour watch.
So is there much about his work on film, as in archiving and
there's
the
not
interest?
As much as you would want.
That's what I've... And again, I'm really fascinated by his fascination, if you know what I mean.
He talks about his love of film. Mm. You don't get that thing of how much he does for film preservation. Or the great music documentaries that he's done over the past 30 years. I mean, I'm not a Beatles fan, but the film he made about George Harrison is absolutely wonderful.
Well, I love The Age of Innocence.
Yeah.
But I'm just not a big fan of those men, 70s taxi driver, films. They're not for me.
And you can see where he has struggled to try and get a female perspective into his films. And he's tried. Mm. I don't think he always succeeds, should I say. But, And after Killers of the Flower Moon,
But the documentary, definitely worth a watch.
It's definitely worth seeing, I think I did... I took you one episode a night over 5 nights. And it's fascinating. And it ends on a bit of a cliffhanger. Shall I watch one more? That was before he knew he would be working with. That's it. So I'm just looking at the time. We're again not.
Got another song to get in, then, haven't we?
We've got two songs to get in.
Well, we'll fade this one out quick. Yeah.
Right, so what are you going to do? It's a bit of fill the glass.
Fill the glass. Sorry.
I've got a team of writers on this.
It was always you, Helen.
From Candyman. Fade him because we're running out of time. Over to you, Denise.
What's coming up then? So we've mentioned Begonia is out. Relay is a new film with Riz Ahmed and Lily James. Obviously, I can't see it because it's got Lily James in it. That's out everywhere.
It's got someone called Sam Worthington.
Yeah.
There's a rumour he's been making films for ages. I've no idea who he is.
Continuing, we haven't reviewed it this week, but Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere is
out. We couldn't be bothered seeing it because we had it marked as CBA. Can't be asked.
I wanted to mention the Curzon are showing on their film club night on Halloween, Friday the 31st of October, Night of the Hunter.
Oh,
you want to see that in the
pictures. If you've never seen Night of the Hunter.
There's also the John Carpenter season continues at the light with The Thing.
The Thing.
The Thing is showing on Friday, Monday and Wednesday. Yes. Try and catch that. There's loads. I'm not going to read all of them, but there's loads.
There's loads of stuff going on for Halloween.
Horror film you can catch. Yeah. Have a look. Depeche Mode M, The Light. Mm. That's on this week, on Tuesday, I think. That looks interesting. It's shot in Mexico and it's some live footage, but I think it's.
Or it's some sort of narrative to it?
Yeah, I think so.
I've always been funny about Depeche Mode because I don't know, I sort of lost track with them. I didn't. Their very first single, what was that? You know, that nice ditty.
The meaning
jolly
of love, tell me.
And then, because they were from Basildon, you never took them seriously.
Oh, I loved them. Yeah.
But then, when they came back and they were like, these like they'd been to hell for a week's holiday back.
I got one Christmas the cassette of their singles 81 to 84 and I wore it out and I loved it. It's still a brilliant compilation.
There's some massive stuff there that they've put out. So
any horror film you want to watch, it's probably on anywhere.
Find it. Pays your money. It takes your choice.
This is a quirky, lovely tune to go out on.
Yes, we haven't covered zombie films yet, but we are now. Have a great week. It's just me next week. And have I got something lined up for you listeners.
Enjoy your films.
Enjoy your films. See you next week.